Hello, good evening. Welcome to the Kill Radio Tuesday News. This is John. Today is February 21st. Iraq body count for today from iraqbodycount.net, minimum 28,473 civilians reported killed by military intervention in Iraq, maximum 32,088. There you go.
Hail to the scumbag, the motherfucking president. Fucking piece of shit. Scumbag, asshole, fucking retard. Scumbag, scumbag, you fucking piece of shit.
That's a King Missile song called The President. I love that song. My guest today is Eric Axel Weiss, screenwriter, playwright, humorist. Eric, thanks for coming in.
Thanks.
So we're here to talk about your play, 08, which you're going to have a stage reading of it done at First Stage in the Hollywood Court Theater tomorrow night. And we'll talk a little bit more about what First Stage is later, but let's get right to the point. What is 08 about?
08 is a behind-the-scenes look at Bush and Clinton's 2005 tsunami tour. And the way the play works is that it kind of like interweaves, you know, public record appearances with behind-the-scenes stuff. And the public record stuff, of course, is, you know, whenever possible, it's from the transcript for word for word. Then we go behind the scenes to see, you know, what's really going on. And it came out of, you know, because there's so little transparency right now. Nobody really knows what's going on. You know, there's always debate about what reality is. Mm-hmm. So I just thought, you know, it'd be fun to actually, you know, have these, you know, what do these two guys talk about, you know?
So it's kind of like a funny good night and good luck.
Kind of, yeah.
I mean, in its approach to using real footage and
yeah, it's like funny, but you know, it's serious too. It's not just like spoofing. It really tries to tell a story because you know, when I because you have like Bush and Clinton, and then you have you know, George Jr. and Jimmy Carter, and there's like all these like familial relationships and stuff, and you know, and you know, tensions between them all. So
I remember watching the news, you know, around the time of the tsunami, and suddenly George Bush Sr. and Bill Clinton are on the news, like, every day.
Right.
Basically holding hands, talking about how they're going to get together and do this thing. And,
right.
You know, and it's just like a passive, you know, armchair liberal just kind of, like, watching the news saying, you know, like, did someone drop acid in my coffee, or what's going on here?
Yeah, it was, I thought it was kind of like kind of funny and kind of a novelty at first, and then like 6 months later, like in June, you know, I pick up the paper and, you know, Bill Clinton is visiting Bush up in Kennebunkport. And I thought, wait, what's going on here? I mean, I thought the tsunamis, they were finished with that months ago. Why are they still hanging out? And it was at that point that I thought about, you know, writing a play about, because they obviously have a friendship going on. So what do they talk about? And that was kind of like the basis of wanting to write something about it, you know?
Do you think in real life that they're friendly, or do you think that the public face that we get is part of a big show?
No, I think they're friendly because you know, why else would he visit, you know, Kennebunkport's, you know 3 or 4 months after they handed in their tsunami report? And I think you know, and he stayed there for like 2 days or something. So you know, they must, and you know, with everything that's going on right now, it's like, well, does the Iraq War ever come up when they're hanging out? You know, or. Or 9/11, or you know what I mean? It's like, yeah. What do these guys talk about?
So no, they don't talk shop. I'm
right.
Sure.
Well, it just can't be all light talk. I mean, you'd think that something would come up, you know. Maybe the sun would come up at some point. I don't know, you know. But
why did you decide to do a stage play? I know you have a pretty extensive background in screenwriting. You've had several produced films.
I guess because I wanted to have it performed, one thing. I just thought that nobody would ever make this movie. Mm-hmm. And also, I don't know, there's just something
it would actually be 08 by the time they got around to it, right?
Well, I guess isn't there like this thing in the theater called a twofer, you know, two people like acting on stage, and you think about play, I mean, everything from like Miss Julie to Waiting for Godot, just like there's something about the theater that just two people on stage, that's, it's a medium that's uniquely well for us, uniquely good for us. So I thought it works, you know, uniquely well. So I thought, you know, for Bush and Clinton, it would just—I don't know—I didn't want it to be a play because there's more money in movies, obviously, and TV, but
there's some money in movies and TV, yes.
But it just seemed to naturally to be a play. I don't know, and people still say, you know, well, maybe you can turn it into something else, you know, because with the mix of mediums, maybe you could, you know, I don't know, do something like, you know, American Splendor or something like that wove in, you know, people playing somebody with the real thing and stuff like that. I don't know.
Although I think, you know, in terms, because most of the play is two characters,
right,
establishing a relationship with each other, George Bush Sr. And Bill Clinton. And I think there's something interesting about placing that in an intimate environment, you know, where you feel like you're in their living room, you're at the Bush house,
right,
and getting to know these people, and they're real people.
Yeah,
know? They're not these superheroes. And at the end of the day, you know, they curse and they have attitudes and they have their little idiosyncrasies and their weaknesses.
Yeah, because when I was doing research, because when I saw them like on the golf cart at Kenny Bunkport in June, I started doing research like what had gone on the last 6 months, and it just provides clues to like little things that are going on behind the scenes. For example, you know, Clinton was part of the delegation that's in the play, you know, that goes to see that goes to Pope John Paul's funeral, and then they made some mention that Carter wasn't invited, which I thought was bizarre because, you know, they were close. I mean, he became Pope during Carter's presidency, and so you just like see little clues of where there could be tensions and where there could be little things like that. And then there was like another remark that isn't in the play where, you know, after Clinton had his surgery, he's, you know, President Bush said that, that, you know, when Clinton awoke, he was surrounded by his closest family, you know, Chelsea, Hillary, and my dad. And when he said that, there was just like a hint of, I don't know, maybe jealousy or, you know, you just wonder, you know,
my dad.
Yeah, exactly. My dad, not his dad, you know, so you just wonder, you know, if there is, I mean, and you would think that there would be, because they are human beings, as you say, they're not superheroes. And so.
Now the main topic of conversation in the play is what's going to happen in 2008.
Right.
Who's going to assume the presidency and, how's the handoff going to...
Right, yeah. Yeah, and I just thought, well, that's, they got to be talking about that. You would think they would, you know. And I don't know what's going to happen in OA, but I mean, everybody who thought that Hillary wouldn't... Who everybody's saying that Hillary isn't going to win, you know, in 2008, or the same people that said that she wouldn't never become, you know, senator from New York. So I think...
Yeah.
So, she's definitely, you know...
Yeah, I mean, I have to... Like, personally, I think it's hard for me to imagine... a woman president in my lifetime. And I don't think it's just cynicism. I don't think it's just a reading of history. It's hard for me to imagine that taking place unless she was running against another woman. I mean, if she were to run against Condoleezza Rice, I think that would be a battle in which I could see a woman assuming presidency.
I guess, yeah. I mean,
but I can't picture her losing to a man.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
not that I wouldn't vote for a brown piece of paper if it was running on the Democratic ticket.
Right.
I'm just saying.
I don't know. I mean, I guess the only reason why it's possible because everybody who may think that Iraq is a mess now is going to really think it in 2008. I mean, I think, you know, the problems are going to get even worse.
Yeah, if we're dealing with the same things
and it's
worse.
Yeah, it's going to be harder. I think it's just going to be hard for a Republican to win. I mean, if things keep on going
in the
way they are,
going,
in the direction they are, I mean, which of course they don't, but if they do, you know, I can't imagine a Republican, you know, winning. You know?
They were interviewing Bill Maher on CNN today, and there's all this thing going on today about the ports and how important that is, and one of the things that I think it was Wolf Blitzer who was interviewing him. He asked, you know, he was saying how the president was making a point of saying that it's important that we have these business transactions with Arab communities so that we can improve our image in that region.
Right.
And Bill Maher says, if you want to improve our image in that region, why don't you stop torturing them? That would be a good starting point.
Right,
you know?
Right, yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's,
but one of the things I think is interesting about this play, though, is it doesn't get into too much of the really heavy stuff. It's not a downer. It's not about death and destruction. It's really more about families and family feuds, even.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a huge fan of, I like The Lion in Winter, and it was like something that I thought about when doing this, because when looking through the, you know, what went on between, you know, Bill and George, you know, during those 6 months, when you see those family relationships, and also it's just the kind of people, and when we talk about fun, I mean, Clinton and Bush Sr. are people that seem to be like very optimistic, very... they're, you know, loving people in a way, you know what I mean? Not quite the way the sun is, you know what I mean? But someone who really loves life and people who love life and love people. And there is that kind of like joy. And plus, I just wanted to have fun too. I wanted it to be like a fun and funny experience. And I think, yeah. But have it real at the same time, you know, not like spoof it. I was really afraid of it turning into, you know, a 90-minute Saturday Night Live sketch, you know. And
for this reading, you have this is part of the celebrity fundraiser for First Stage. And tell me a little bit about who you have reading some of these parts.
Well, we have Alan Rachins. He was in L.A. Law. He was, I don't know how to describe him, except he was the bald-headed guy from L.A. Law.
Dad in Dharma and Greg.
He also played Tony Moss in Showgirls. I don't know if he was the one guy picked Elizabeth Berkley out of the lineup.
I forgot about that.
He told Elizabeth Berkley to put ice in her bra to make the nipples come out. That's him. And he's great. He really has kind of that quality that you need for that role to work, playing Butch Senior.
And his voice carries so well into the stage.
Yeah, and then we have Sam Bottoms. He's probably best known as the surfer kid from Apocalypse Now. And I guess in a way, like the Bill Clinton role in the play is kind of like a straight man role, because, you know, Butch Senior and Butch II gets to do like all the goofy stuff, and Butch and Clinton's kind of like a straight man, which is what Sam's great at. You know, he's like he has that kind of like straight man quality. And then Dean Haglund, the guy, the Langley from X-Files, playing Bush too, I just came across his photo, and I just thought this guy would be great, you know. But how to contact him? And it turns out, you know, Dean has a website, so I just sent him an email, and he I didn't even know if he was going to show up at rehearsals on Saturday because I just sent him. He sent me an email. I said okay, and I was like okay. So, but he was fantastic. I mean, you were there. He just tore it up. So
yeah, definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
And the role that George W. Bush plays in this play, it's really funny because it mirrors his real life in the sense that you can almost see in the dialogue his desperate desire to be the star of the play, but he's not the star of the play.
Right.
You know, but he's. And every time he speaks, it's like, hey, pay attention to me. I have this really amazing thing to say.
Right.
I can't remember what it is, but it's really important.
Yeah.
And I thought, and, you know, obviously that...
Yeah,
I mean... What exists in real life, he's always trying to get our attention. Seriously, as the president, really. Look at me. I know what I'm doing. I'm legitimate.
Right. He has, like, this angry energy. And especially when you see... You know, it's funny, you can go to the White House website and see some of these news conferences. And the one between... when he's standing next to Clinton and his father, it's just, he seems like this, you know, bratty kid next to these two statesmen, you know what I mean? There is like a huge difference, I think, between these two guys and George W.
And he has a monologue in this play where he's talking about the interest rates or the economy or something like that. And that's from
after the election, he went on the security, you know, while there's war and destruction over in Iraq, he went on this Social Security roadshow.
Right.
That's all he did, I think, for a few months. And they were just ridiculous. I mean, they were like something out of the Soviet Union or something, the way they were staged. There was this one in Tampa that's famous where he just like was almost unintelligible talking about the security. Someone asked, you know, so how does this program work, or how is this going to help seniors? And he started talking about it, and it made absolutely like no sense. And it's in the play. I mean, that's when he tries to answer that question, and it just comes out unintelligible.
Yeah, and it's a great monologue because it really doesn't make any sense, and it really does sound like him.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. Yeah,
I'm consistently amazed by his use of the word
Right, right.
I mean, public speaking has got to be like third or fourth on the list of skills you need in order to be president.
Right.
And is generally considered not.
Yeah, I know.
Like
he can't even give a speech. I don't know. But, you know, you would never, you know, the way everybody props this guy up is just amazing, you know.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I think it's gotten to a point where the people who had been supporting him, who have now, over the past 6 years... been proven wrong time and time again. Like, oh, let's give him a shot, or he's got good advisors and all this stuff.
Exactly.
Now that nonsense is in the past, it's almost it's just a very emotional thing, I think, for Republicans, where it's like they don't want to admit that the entire administration is based on a lie.
Yeah, now they're saying take the long view. Like maybe like 20 or 50 years from now, he'll be proven right, you know, or something. Like
yeah, he'll have his face on Mount Rushmore or something like that. Oh, my.
Yeah, this guy's he's a mess, yeah.
Well, you wrote a film called Buffalo Soldiers.
Soldiers, yeah.
And that was produced starring Joaquin Phoenix, right?
Yeah, and Ed Harris. And that was, it was shot over in England and Germany. It takes place on a U.S. Army base in Germany just before the fall of the Berlin Wall. And Joaquin Phoenix is kind of like this wheeler dealer on the base, and Ed Harris is like the new, you know, master sergeant, and they kind of like get into it, and has this huge explosive sequence at the end. So it's really well done.
And does your work usually lend itself towards politics? You usually go in that direction?
You know, this is probably by far the most political piece I've ever written. You know, but it just seems. I mean, even though this is not like a as you say, not a completely like down piece. I just felt that, you know, we live in such crazy times, and this wasn't like one of those ideas that I could just like put in the drawer and like do it sometimes later. I just felt I had to write it now, and I didn't tell anybody. I mean, you know, most of all my agent, because I don't think he would have been happy if I told him I was writing a stage play. You know? But I had a great time writing it. You know, I was involved in a couple projects before this that never went anywhere, and it's great to write this. And then, you know, tomorrow it's going to get performed on a stage, and it's just, you know, it's been really satisfying experience. Even though I haven't gotten a penny of it from it yet. Well, so yeah, no. So.
But it's the Thai art, you know. You're doing
exactly it for, right. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
For a different reason. So it's going to be done at the by First Stage at the Hollywood Court Theater, which
right.
is in the. Big Methodist Church with the red ribbon on Highland and Franklin.
Exactly. Free parking.
Free parking.
Yeah.
And it's a nonprofit organization devoted to the development of new work, new theater, and film, actually. And what's the suggested donation is, I think, 15?
Yeah, suggested. You, I mean, if you come up and you have $5 or a few dollars, that's fine, too. I mean, you're not going to get turned away. So, but yeah, it is suggested $15 donation, which was set, you know, but you know, it's, they do a lot of great stuff.
With celebrities and everything.
Exactly.
It's,
yeah.
It's pretty good deal.
Yeah. Yeah. And they gave it, you know, I mean, it's going to be a good show.
Where do you see it going after the stage reading process?
You know, I don't know. It's like, you know, because this is my first play and I don't really know a lot about theater. I mean, this whole thing has been an introduction to me. I met Susan and she's the one, Susan Touchborn, the director, and she brought it into First Stage. So I don't know. I mean, I'm inviting theater people to see it tomorrow evening, and I don't know. I'm talking to a few other theaters in the area about maybe putting it on, but I'm hoping to get, you know, a production up soon somewhere.
So in your imagination, anyway, you could see it going to like a full run in a major theater?
Yeah, I think so, especially with the right actors, you know, because it is, as you say, it's a fun piece. I mean, people who are there are going to be entertained, you know, and not in a way that it's just spoofing. I mean, they're going to have like an emotional experience, too. So, and hopefully, you know, people will see that tomorrow night, I think, you know.
Yeah, you know, I often wonder, actually, what's going on in George Bush Sr.'s mind throughout all of this.
Yeah.
I mean, his son is president.
Yeah.
And whatever you have to say about Bush 1's policies, most of which, my recollection, is not good, but still, he was a legitimate president. You know,
right.
People considered him a legitimate president.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have to wonder, like, how does he deal with the fact that he has to know.
Right.
That his son is not really a legitimate president.
Yeah, and that's the emphasis from the play, because you wonder, like, what are these conversations? I mean, you know that Clinton doesn't approve, so, and you would think that the father doesn't also, you know, so you wonder, like, what these guys are talking about, you know, when they have, you know, when it's just them in the kitchen and Kenny Bonkport or something yeah. like that, you know, and I mean, you think back to, 1989, the Berlin Wall falls, and like all of Bush Sr.'s advisors are like, they're pulling their hair out because they want Bush Sr. to make this grand gesture. You know, they want him to like go to the wall and proclaim that we won the Cold War and some, mm-hmm. and you know, basically say, you know, do what Junior did, you know, basically fly the jet onto the aircraft carrier, missions accomplished. And And Senior said, no, I mean, this is their moment. You know, let them have it. You know, and it really, I think that was very important that he did that. And so that kind of like, there's just a certain compassion that he has, I think. I mean, you're right. He's not like quite the nice old grandpa that everybody makes him out to be. But I think there is like a compassion and that he has that the son doesn't have.
Well, he was the last Republican president, I think a lot of people say. I mean, the thing about George W. Bush is he's not technically really a Republican.
Right.
He's just on the right.
Right.
You know, and he's surrounded by other Republicans and pseudo-Republicans. But
And I don't think he's ever felt like he's really gotten his father's, he really doesn't feel like, you know, he's really gotten his due, you know, his son. I mean, there's another story that's interesting. In 1994, you know, George is running for governor of Texas, and his brother Jeb is running for governor of Florida. And, you know, Florida is a more important race in terms of, you know, having Republican control in terms of, like, elections and stuff like that. And, you know, the Bushes are already, like, a big presence down in Texas. So anyway, so election night comes and, you know, Jeb loses, but George wins. You know, George is, like, really, you know, he's excited. He gets on the phone with his dad. And after he gets off the phone with his dad, he's in despair because he says, you know, all my dad knows is that Jeb lost today. He doesn't know that I won, you know.
Wow.
So, you know, he's still fighting for that approval. And, you know, he invaded Iraq.
That's one thing, yes. He did invade another country, yeah.
So, but, you know, but I really, he, you know, he talks about being a war president. He's really striving for greatness here, even though he's, you know, blowing up half the world. And,
yeah.
You know, but he's really just doing it because he really wants to be, you know, known as a great guy. So,
Tell me a little bit about some of the research that you did for this play, other than watching CNN and taking these transcripts. Were there any books that you found influential or any, any other sources of information that sort of helped you along as you put this piece together?
Really? I mean,
was there a deep throat that you called, maybe?
No, I mean, it was just mostly looking at the public record and trying to find those moments where you can infer, like, some kind of human emotion or some kind of familial thing going on, because I really wanted that to be, you know, the motivations of the people in the play. But, you know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, but just reading everything about what's going on, I guess, filtered into... you know, the play, you know, yeah.
What do you like about writing plays versus writing screenplays?
Well, I guess it's just the freedom of it. Because, you know, in the play, when you're writing a screenplay, there's all these things that you have to consider. Because when your job is done, you know, everybody else's job begins. It's very collaborative, and there's a lot of money involved. So you always have to think about, like, what the market and who the buyer is that you're trying to write for. And this, I didn't really think about any of that. I just thought about, well, what would be the best, you know, way to do it, which is why I wrote the play in the beginning, just for that freedom, and just allowing myself that freedom and creating something.
I think one of the good things about plays too is they're still kind of, they're a good read. You know, you can sit and read a play and feel like you accomplished something. Like a screenplay just doesn't exist unless it's being made into a movie. It's like, you know, looking at a blueprint to a house as opposed to a drawing of a house. You know?
Right, yeah.
So if your screenplay doesn't get picked up or produced or something like that, then as a writer, I imagine that'd be really extremely frustrating, where even if you write a play that never gets produced, you can still give that play to your friend. And they might read it and still get something emotional out of it, you know?
Right, and just having, like, the reading tomorrow night, I feel like in some small way it's being realized, you know? It's not just... as you say, like just ending up on a shelf somewhere, you know, or in someone's drawer.
So for those who don't know how a staged reading works, this is basically an on-its-feet production with blocking in it and a stage and everything, but with script in hand.
Right.
And the actors have had one day of rehearsing, and they, you know, have an understanding of how the play is going to work.
Right, yeah.
But it's not a full-fledged production.
Exactly. But I think you'll get a sense of... And there's also someone narrating some of the stage direction, too, off to the side. But I think, you know, you definitely get a sense, hopefully, you know, I think what's going on. And there'll be lighting, too, so, yeah, it'll be good.
Excellent. Well, yeah. Looks like Starsky Suave of National Corporate Radio has just joined us. Starsky is one of... one of our coolest DJs here at Kill Radio. And would you be interested in reading a little bit of a play with me? Eric Starsky. Starsky, Eric.
Nice to meet you.
Eric just wrote this play, 08, about Bush 1 and Clinton.
I read your little book.
Yes, and it's going to be put on tomorrow night as a staged reading at First Stage, which is at the Hollywood Court Theater, which is in the Big Methodist Church with the red ribbon on the corner of Highland and Franklin. Suggested donation is $15. Eric, did you pick a page or a couple of pages that you prefer to read?
I did not, actually.
We can just do anything beginning. You like. Right. The beginning is fine.
Yeah, or if there's another scene that you think would be better.
No? Just do like a couple of pages just to give the listeners a little taste of it. Why don't you just set the tone for us? We're in...
The first scene is just a few days after the tsunami. George Sr. is like in a private room of the White House. He's waiting for Clinton. And they're just before they're about to go on and make their big announcement that they're going to be working for, raising money for tsunami relief.
Starsky, you want to read Bush or Clinton? Okay. Since this is Bush 1.
Is this operational?
You are...
Hello? Hello?
Yes. Actually,
one, two,
you're
one,
hot.
Two. Too hot?
Let me bring it down a little bit.
Too hot to stop.
All right, we're good. Okay, so this is... read a couple pages from 08 by Eric Axel Weiss.
Starting.
Where? Says, Josh, who's George Bush 1's assistant, reappears to usher in former President Bill Clinton and then leaves the two ex-presidents alone. Clinton, seeing that Bush 1 is on the phone, also turns to leave.
No, don't go, Bill. I got Ford on the line here.
I'll be right outside.
Sure. Bill is right here.
And in this moment, Clinton is on the phone with President Ford. Hello, President Ford. How are you? I'm fine. Very excited. She's fine. And how is your beautiful wife, Betty? That's wonderful. Okay, I should probably let you go. Wait. Okay. He hands a BlackBerry back to Bush 1. Wants to say goodbye.
Okay, Jerry. We'll chat later. Great. Bye. I always get a kick out of talking to that man. President Gerald Ford, what a human being.
Still sharp as a tack.
Wouldn't go that far. But hey, he's an ex-president, member of a very special fraternity. It's always a pleasure to meet one in person. Great to see you again, President Clinton.
An honor, as always, President Bush.
Take a seat. We have some time to talk before my boy stops by to make our tsunami announcement. Some time to chat. Oh, do you want something? Did they take care of you?
I'm good. I don't think words can express how excited I am. We are going to do so much good here. We're going to ease so much suffering.
Oh, yeah. Tsunami. Tragic. No doubt about it. Not sure if I'm up to traveling over there in person, necessarily. But nevertheless, just looking at the devastation, we're going to get our hearts broken over this one, Bill. We're going to repair some broken hearts. Repair our image across the world. God knows we could use some help with that. Particularly with Indonesia. It will help us a lot with the Muslims.
BlackBerry?
Ex-presidents do have to wipe their own asses, don't you know?
Look at you, President Bush, showing us all that 80 is the new 50.
Whatever. Just look at this email. Got it now while I was waiting for you.
Wants to donate $2 million. Fantastic.
Ever since it's been on the news this morning about us teaming up like this, I tell you, it's been electric. Donations pouring in. Here's another one.
$1 million.
Another one here.
Nice.
By the time my son formally announces our partnership, we'll have 10, 20 million raised, just from this morning. So I'm confident in our ability to raise a truckload. Not worried about that.
Just imagine, we're going to mobilize the largest relief effort the world has ever seen. I'm raring to go.
So let's get to work.
Yes, let's roll up our sleeves and get right down to it.
Is Hillary going to run in 08 or not?
What? That's funny. We're here to work on mobilizing tsunami relief.
Ostensibly. We're here to talk about the transfer of power, Bill. Smooth transfer. Succession.
Your son just won an election.
True. And in less than 3 weeks, my son will be inaugurated for his second term as President of the United States. And there is nothing you can do about that. Not here to talk about that. Broken pottery. We closed the books on 04. Now it's 05. Which means we talk about 08.
What if I don't know the answer?
Oh, please.
It's a little early to be talking 08.
You know the answer, so answer. Is she gonna run or is she gonna Cuomo?
Now.
No, nothing. I mean, now nothing. I'm not fucking around here. We hand in our tsunami report on February 21st. That doesn't give us much time to work things out.
Right, and we have to set aside some time for the actual disaster, right?
In the immortal words of Ed McMahon, you are correct, sir. Look, if she decides to run, we both know her chances. My side just needs some assurances that she's not going to do anything drastic with our favorite corporation.
Halliburton?
No, United States of America, dipshit.
President Bush, I have always admired
And stop
you.
Working me with this President Bush crap. My name is George.
I want to focus to be on what we came here to do, and I'd like to be on the record about that.
Fine. The microphone is in the lamp beside you.
Clinton mockingly turns towards the lamp and grabs it like a microphone.
I came here to work on tsunami relief.
Old Bill, there are no microphones. You can say anything, in fact. Scream it if you like. Room is also soundproof. Just think of it, Bill. You can say anything that's on your mind. Anything you want to share?
So if the tsunami had never happened, what would have been our ostensible reason for getting together? Middle East?
Yeah, you wish. No, probably would have been African relief, some kind, like AIDS. Then the tsunami happened. Sorry, Africa.
You really are something, you know that? The sheer arrogance. So you decide who gets to be president? What about the will of the American people? Does that mean anything to you? Meanwhile, hundreds of thousands dead from the tsunami, millions more displaced, doesn't mean a goddamn thing to you, does it? You just play your games. I am very excited to be working with President Bush on tsunami relief, he speaks into the microphone. And that's all I plan on doing with you. Hillary is hereby off the table.
Really?
Sorry to disappoint.
You firm about that? Just work on tsunami relief and nothing else?
Yes, George.
And you can forget about working on tsunami relief with me.
It's already been announced.
Oh, no. It has not been announced. It has been leaked to a widely inaccurate liberal media who would love to see you press back into service. Oh, you should see the way they're harping about you on CNN, the Clinton News Network. Once it's been revealed that I'm flying solo on tsunami relief, everybody will realize that the previous report of us working together was just a hoax. I mean, really, how ridiculous. The elite liberal media following another phony story all over again, just like Dan Rather. As for you, you're going to have to go home and explain to Hillary how...
No, you can't do that. I'm already here. There will very soon be a press conference...
Which you will not attend. We'll just have you whisked away. Josh is very good at that.
Which one takes out his BlackBerry?
And don't let the doorknob hit you where the good Lord split you. Oh, Josh.
Wait.
Hold on, Josh. If you stay, you must play.
President Bush,
I'm sorry, what was that?
Clinton can't form an answer, frozen.
Okay, I'll give you a moment. Forget it, Josh, false alarm.
Bush puts away the BlackBerry and places a fatherly hand on Clinton's shoulder.
Man, you feel tense. Why don't you let out a good scream?
Like what?
Like anything. The room is soundproof. No bugs. Completely secure. Just you and me, two former leaders all alone. You don't believe me?
No,
yeah!
Hey!
Stop, you're killing me, Bill. Josh, where the fuck are you? President Clinton is stabbing me with a knife. I'm dying. Please, help. Won't somebody help?
Bush One does a convincing job of somebody in their last throes.
God help me! No!
Stop that. Stop. Now you stop that.
Doesn't matter. Can't hear. And I'm telling you, Bill, it really gets the blood flowing. 3 days into the new year and I feel up. Up for 05. Scream!
Clinton just shakes his head and grins.
You know what? Let's take a step back for a moment. Forget about the tsunami. Forget about Hillary. Oh, wait. Let's talk about you.
Me?
You. You are here in the White House on official business after so many years away. You must have all these feelings and emotions struggling to come over the surface, up to the surface, but you don't admit to them. Maybe you don't even know about them. The feelings just stay there inside of you, and I would bet that it's doing quite a number on your body. Not good. I want you to do this for me. I want you to inhale that White House air. Exhale, relax. Work with me now. I know what I'm talking about here. You know, I just did a parachute jump on my 80th birthday.
I do hope to learn some agent secrets from you.
Shut up and keep breathing. Very important. Breathing. Basis for everything we do, yet we never pay attention to it. Why? Too busy with the bullshit. You starting to feel that emotion bottled up inside of you, just bursting to get out? Can't keep it all inside, Bill. I'm telling you, you can try, but you can't. So for God's sakes, I want you to shout it all out. Flush it out. Get it out.
Clinton stops playing along and resumes breathing normally.
Shout! Roger Moore is a cunt! Boy, that felt great. Go ahead, scream. Monica Lewinsky is a cunt.
No.
Do it!
George. George.
Monica Lewinsky is a cunt.
But I don't feel that way. Honestly, I...
For heaven's sake, will you wipe that shit-eating grin off your face and show me what you got inside? Jesus fucking Christ, you spent the last 4 years trying to look important.
I am here.
And now, finally, we're asking you back.
Talk about the tsunami.
That very same people who tried to destroy you. It was coup d'etat. There, I said it. We did our best to run you out of town, you mealy-mouthed piece of shit. How does that make you feel?
I'm fine with it.
Bullshit, you're fine with it.
I am fine with it.
Bullshit. And now we ask you back and you come a-running like some fucking horny little toad.
For one of the worst natural disasters.
Monica Lewinsky is a cunt.
Shut up!
Bush won't stop with the lights shoving. Clinton tries to avoid conflict with the 80-year-old by stepping back.
Go ahead. Tell me to my face that what my son has done to this country is what he's done with every other business I've handed him. Run it straight into the ground.
No.
Show some guts for once in your life.
No.
Monica Lewinsky is a cunt.
Shut up!
Say it!
No!
Monica Lewinsky is a cunt!
No!
Suddenly, unexpectedly blows up big time. Extreme violent emotion comes screaming out of him. Searching for an outlet for his rage, Clinton instinctively grabs a nearby chair and smashes it into the floor, screaming with every blow until the chair is in little pieces and Clinton is on the ground, gasping for air.
You okay?
Felt good.
Damn right it does. And the only person you could do that in front of is another ex-president. Am I right? Damn straight. Feels good to let it all out. Yep, yep.
Let me be.
Okay if I call Josh in?
Clinton nods. Bush speaks into his BlackBerry.
I need you in here.
Josh enters. He looks at Clinton, concerned.
Josh, collect this chair debris.
Certainly, Mr. President.
Without skipping a beat, the unflappable Josh quickly picks up pieces of the chair and leaves. Clinton is still on the floor.
Geez, I'm sorry. I see your red face, and suddenly all I can think of is a triple bypass you had a few months back.
Quadruple.
Reckless of me to do that, I know. Especially with us going on live TV very shortly. And then, don't forget, we got Larry King later in the day. But you see, I need to know before that announcement that you were on board. I'm sure you can appreciate that. Shall I call a doctor?
I'm fine.
Here, then.
Sorry about the chair.
It's no problem.
So I guess I'm off the tsunami project.
What are you talking about?
I'm not going to bargain my wife's possible presidential bid with you before your son has even been sworn in for a second term. No, sir.
Time's called for it, Bill. We're living in an era of extremism.
And whose fault is that?
Be nice. I'm just saying. Why not have everything in place early?
Absolutely not. Ridiculous. I will not discuss it. No.
Neither gives up ground for a beat. Mexican standoff.
You're not serious. You don't want to leave. What else you got?
The Clinton Foundation.
Right, the Bill Clinton Foundation. Is that kind of like the Jimmy Carter Center? Give me a break.
Would I like to be doing more? Sure, we both would. But this ain't 1992, George. I'm not a cheap date anymore. I'm not the same man. I'm not as desperate as you think I am to stay. In fact, I'm ready to go now if you want to follow through your bullshit threat. Call in Josh. Have me tossed out on my ear. Do I leave, or do we work on tsunami relief?
Bush One doesn't answer. Josh pokes in his head just long enough to say,
President CTA, 30 seconds.
Oh, and by the way, if I do stay, we not only devote ourselves full time to the disaster, we also go over there for a first-hand inspection of the devastation. And don't tell me you're not up for it, Mr. Parachute Jumper. You got it? Come with me, President Bush, and see for yourself just how little control you actually have over world events. What's it gonna be, Poppy? Better make a decision soon. Once your boy makes his announcement, there's no turning back.
Bushwin holds on to his steely glare when George W. Bush, President of the United States, Bush II, enters with his mother, Barbara Bush.
I think we should probably stop there.
Okay.
So, as young Bush and Barbara enters.
Man, what did I just interrupt here?
Because I can't do a good Barbara. No, neither. Starsky, thanks so much for helping.
I want to hear the whole thing.
Well, you'll have to come by, definitely, tomorrow night at the Hollywood Court Theater in the Big Methodist Church on the corner of Island and Franklin, yeah. And parking is free, and suggested donation $15. And its first stage presents a staged reading of 08 by Eric Axel Weiss. And anything else you want to add?
I can't think of anything else.
Well, I really appreciate you coming in and talking about the play. It's been really fun interviewing you.
Thanks for having me by here. It was great. Be part of Killer Radio. I listened to it, actually.
Yeah, actually, I thought that was great. I told you I'd do this Kill Radio show. Yeah. Here you go. I listened to Kill Radio. I've been getting a lot more of that lately. Yeah.
Exactly.
So now you see what we look like from the inside out.
I know. I listened to like 4 or 5 internet radio stations, and this is one of them. So.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, keep us updated, you know, if the play goes on to be produced somewhere else, you know, we'll talk about it.
Definitely.
You know?
Yeah.
And you're always welcome back.
Okay, great.
All right, take care, Eric.
Okay, thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Beneath the rhythm and sound lies another.